Summary of Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. Written by Alyssa Burnett and Quick Read. Narrated by Alex Smith. Introduction. Save more bees, plant more trees, clean our seas. We see a number of motivational slogans like these on eco-friendly t-shirts. And indeed, these pithy messages are great reminders that climate change is one of the most pressing issues of our era. Unfortunately, however, many people stop at wearing t-shirts that raise awareness. Having broadcasted their values on their clothing, many assume that they've done their part for saving the planet. And sadly, many of the people who proudly wear these t-shirts are the same people who don't adjust their lifestyle to include sustainable practices. This is certainly bad, but it pales in comparison to those who ignore climate change altogether. So what can we do? How can we get everyone on board to create a truly sustainable future? How can we give our planet what it needs? To answer these questions, we will turn to the wisdom of Native American people who have existed in harmony with nature for centuries. And over the course of this summary, we'll explore the toxic impact of colonization on culture and climate to learn why we should have listened to indigenous people a long time ago. Chapter 1. Torn Between Two Cultures. You might assume that the author's research on the sustainability practices of indigenous tribes is the result of interviews or an anthropological study. But the author is actually Native American herself. Her family is from the Potawatomi tribe. The Potawatomi are an Algonquian Native American people in the Great Plains, Upper Mississippi River, and Western Great Lakes region. The Potawatomi people speak their own language, also called Potawatomi. And in their language, the name of their tribe means people of the place of fire. Like other Native American tribes, the Potawatomi have a rich cultural history that has been all but destroyed through decades of colonization and abuse by white oppressors. In the early 1800s, they were slowly starved off their ancestral lands by American settlers until they had no choice but to give up their land and allow white colonists to settle there. Once they had given up control, they were quickly marched out of the state and onto reservations in a manner very similar to the notorious forced relocation known as the Trail of Tears. Given this painful history of colonization and oppression, it's unsurprising that the Potawatomi people would cling to their ancestral heritage and be suspicious of white American culture. As a result, the author often felt that she was torn between two worlds. She soaked up the native traditions and oral history of her grandmother and felt compelled to honor and embrace her heritage. But as an American kid growing up in New York, she also felt tremendous pressure to be normal and fit in. While this is a difficult balance for every child to strike, the pressure is certainly more intense for children who are being raised in two different cultures. The author felt that this strain was especially difficult because her two cultures were polar opposites. The dichotomy was especially obvious when it came to cultural attitude towards food and farming. For example, her Potawatomi family taught her about the importance of gratitude, sustainability, and reciprocity. They believe that people and nature are interconnected in a mutually beneficial relationship. So when you are kind to the environment, you are also being kind to yourself and vice versa. They also believe that human beings have a moral obligation to show gratitude for nature's bounty. For example, if you enjoy wild berries or grains that you have grown or harvested yourself, you should be kind to nature and express gratitude for what you have enjoyed. In practice, this might mean that you plant a seed as a gesture of thanks or do something else that encourages nature to flourish. Modern America, by contrast, is primarily interested in what it can take. Although we are seeing an increase in efforts to give back to nature and respect the planet, we have an overabundance of food waste, fast fashion, and deforestation. Rather than thanking the planet for what it gives us, we are violently taking what we want and giving little in return. Having noticed this catastrophic disparity between the values of her two worlds, the author began to think critically about the values of her native people. When you compare the two cultures, attitudes, and values, It's certainly easy to see which is preferable. And that's why Kimmerer thinks it's time that we normalize Native American sustainability practices. Chapter 2. Sustainability through reciprocity. Now that we've examined some of the core values of the Potawatomi, it's time to take a closer look at how these values would affect our lives in practice. The author believes that a shift in our attitude towards nature and our relationship with it would be the biggest step in the right direction. Because, as you can see from the previous chapter, our entire outlook would be different if we viewed ourselves as being in a mutually beneficial relationship with nature. In this respect, our relationship with the planet would be much like our relationship with a romantic partner or a friend. In either scenario, it's widely accepted that being selfish is a bad thing. No one wants to invest in a relationship where one person takes without giving anything in return. So if we thought of ourselves as doing that to the planet, how would it impact our worldview? What would we stop doing? What practices would we implement instead? For example, many people think of recycling as being an extremely environmentally friendly practice, and indeed it is. But often, we do the bare minimum when it comes to recycling, and behave as though we expect to receive a trophy for our sacrifices and sustainability. This example shows exactly how skewed our worldview can be, because it's highly unlikely that we would condone the attitude in our relationship with another person. For example, if you gave your boyfriend a kiss or remembered his birthday, would you think, "Wow, I'm the world's best girlfriend"? Probably not, right? Rather, you'd understand that you were doing the bare minimum and that you should really up your game. Instead of doing the bare minimum, you would probably think that you should do more to show that you love and appreciate him. And that's exactly how we should approach our relationship with the earth. The Potawatomi understand this, and they put this into practice through many facets of their everyday lives. One example can be seen through a tradition known as the honorable harvest. A honorable harvest is founded on the principle that the earth does not exist solely for human consumption. Other animals and plants depend on nature for survival as well. The Potawatomi believe that you must respect this balance if you want to live in harmony with nature. So when they grew crops, the people only harvested half of what they grew. The half was used to feed their families. The other half was used to feed the wild animals and plants who lived in the area and depended on the availability of crops and fertile soil to grow. In doing so, the Potawatomi believe that they are giving back to nature and thanking the land and other animals by acknowledging their mutually beneficial relationship. This practice is not mandated by the government or enforced in any way. Rather, it's something that people do willingly out of the goodness of their own hearts because it's a value they cherish. And having considered the example, the author posits that modern American society should introduce similar practices. Although we currently have no such laws on the books, Kimmerer argues that we shouldn't have to make this practice a legal statute. Instead, what if we simply showed other people the importance of being kind to the planet, as we are kind to one another? What if this was something people wanted to do? If we could orchestrate a shift in our cultural mentality and view sustainability practices as an act of kindness, then we wouldn't try to pat ourselves on the back for simple acts like recycling. And we wouldn't waste our time trying to legislate practices that many people wouldn't follow anyways. Instead, we would willingly engage in sustainability through a sense of reciprocity. And rather than snatching resources from the earth, we could revolutionize our attitudes about what we need and what we have a right to take from nature. That's why the author posits that the concept of reciprocity is key to conceptualizing our relationship with nature. By definition, reciprocity means the practice of exchanging things with others for mutual benefit, especially privileges granted by one